In rather uneventful fashion, the New York auctioneer William A. Janek listed for public sale a catalog's worth of items. Lot 193 was a 19th-century silver enamel-covered box with gilt interior, apparently the work of a Russian silversmith. A man named Albert Rabizadeh was interested in this item, a fact he demonstrated by sending in to the auction house an absentee bidding form saying as much. This included his name, phone number, address, and credit card info. Rabizadeh was assigned the bidder number 305. On the day of the sale, as usual, the auctioneers recorded on what are known as clerking sheets the results of the bidding. These sheets contain the item number, the consigner's number, the winning bidder's number, and the amount the thing sold for. So, basically, a sheet full of numbers that all stand in the stead of something else. In the event, Rabizadeh won the Russian box for a little more than $400,000, but for some reason refused to pay. The auction house commenced a court action and, at the trial court level, as you might imagine, won. But the defendant appealed, arguing that the New York state law requires, for the sale to be valid, more information than was on the clerking sheets. The exact language is this: if the auctioneer, quote, enters in a sale book a memorandum specifying the nature and price of the property sold, the terms of the sale, the name of the purchaser, and the name of the person on whose account the sale was made, such memorandum is equivalent in effect to a note of the contract or sale, unquote. Rabizadeh's claim, of course, was that neither name was on the clerking sheets. Still, the law, even in New York, is not quite that rigid. The appellate court found that this information does not have to be in one document, but can be pieced together from many different ones. So, in this case, because Rabizadeh filled out and signed the absentee bid form, was assigned a number, and that number was then recorded on the clerking sheets, New York law is satisfied. Well, half satisfied. The consigner of the item, too, must fill out a related form if he or she is allowed a number. But, strangely, the auction house did not have or simply refused to produce such a form. Whatever the reason, the effect is the same. The appellate court found that the auction house did not hew to the letter of the law, even if it was well within the bounds of auction tradition and common sense. So does this mean that anonymous auctioning in New York is a thing of the past? Maybe. But probably not. The appellate court seemed to indicate that the law would have been satisfied if the auction house had disclosed, upon request, the name of the consigner. But there is another angle also alluded to in the court's decision. In a footnote, the court wrote, quote, plaintiff does not argue, and therefore we do not consider, whether the requirement that the memorandum specify the name of the person on whose account the sale was made was satisfied by the inclusion on the clerking sheets of its own name or the name of an agent, unquote. That is, the court did not rule on whether the name of the auction house itself on the clerking sheet instead of the consigner was sufficient to satisfy state law, because the auction house did not ask it to. Footnotes like this are sometimes judicial throat clearings. That is, hey, plaintiff, why didn't you ask us about this so we could have let the right party win? And sometimes they're just footnotes. In any event, I suspect we'll see some form of this argument from the auction house when the ruling is appealed to New York's highest court, which will, almost certainly, find some way to maintain the existence of anonymous sellers. I'm Travis McDade.